From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made yesterday in Buffalo, where Governor Andrew Cuomo delivered one of his regional State of the State addresses. The governor touched on a wide range of issues pertinent to Western New York. Free tuition at public colleges. He called for allowing Uber and other companies to get the green light, and in a separate... Boy, that was a pun. I did not write that intending to have a pun there. That was awful. Ride-sharing. He wants ride-sharing. And in a separate release, he announced plans to spur more development in photonics in Rochester. Those are just some of the wide range of issues. And some observers are viewing these ideas as a launch pad for a presidential run. Cuomo himself has never publicly said he's interested, but some of his proposals, including free tuition, mirror those of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Cuomo says it's the right thing to do. It was also a chance for Cuomo to tout his achievements since assuming the office. And this hour we review the state of the state. My first guest is Karen DeWitt, WXXI's Capital Bureau correspondent. Karen, how are you?
I'm good, Evan.
Well, let's just make sure we're sort of clear on the fact that this is an unusual way of doing a state of the state, and it did not come without any controversy. Give us a little bit of that background.
Well, that's right. It's very unusual. Usually it's given in Albany with all the key players, particularly the legislature, who's going to have to approve the governor's plans. But the governor had a falling out with the legislature in December. They wanted a pay raise, and they wanted to hold a special session to give themselves a pay raise. They haven't had one in 18 years. And negotiations fell through, leaving the lawmakers really mad, and with many of them threatening to boycott the governor's State of the State speech, saying that they weren't going to show up. You might remember last year, January of 2016, the governor was heckled by a lawmaker, Assemblyman Charles Barron, and it was just kind of a rather embarrassing display. So I think the governor was worried about that. And, you know, to really simply, I think, to avoid, you know, empty seats or any kind of heckling, you know, he decided, why not, you know, go around the state instead and, you know, kind of spin this as I'm bringing my message to the people. And that way he kind of cuts out those pesky lawmakers who are annoying him right now. And giving six different speeches, what's pretty amazing, I think we're going to go into speech four in about an hour, is each one has, you know, a Pledge of Allegiance, the National Anthem, the Color Guard. I mean, all that stuff is great. But every single speech, it's like a little mini State of the State with all the pomp and circumstance in every part of the state. So he's like rolling everything out with each one of these speeches.
And forgive me, but isn't this a little ridiculous that he didn't, you know, he's upset with the legislature, so he's just going to kind of take his ball and go home? I mean, okay, he got heckled last year. Well, the person doing the heckling is the one who looks like, you know, the fool, not the governor. And
yes, I'd agree with that, yeah.
You know, yeah, so I don't... This is a big break with tradition, and I kind of understand why some lawmakers may be frustrated, but are they saying so publicly, or are most lawmakers saying, you know, it's fine?
The leader of the Senate Republicans pretty much said publicly, I think the governor should have it in Albany. The Speaker of the Assembly, Carl Hastie, who tends to agree with Cuomo more, said, well, it really doesn't matter where the message is, you know, it's the content of what he says. But yeah, I mean, they're kind of miffed. It's kind of strange. I'm here in Albany, and the lawmakers are kind of going about their business. But, you know, you don't have this major event that, you know, in the past, and, you know, maybe I'm taking a long way back, like 6 or 7 years ago, that people, you know, it used to be kind of a unifying and social and cordial event. And I think that went a long way toward lawmakers working together. The governor and past governors would invite the lawmakers after the speech to the mansion, and there'd be a reception, and people would say nice things about one another. And that does help start the session off. And it just seems like it's very kind of discordant right now, where you have the governor, you know, deliberately scheduling his speeches so that lawmakers can't go to them, even if they wanted to go to them, because they're happening while the session's happening. And then he is finally going to come to Albany last tomorrow afternoon after lawmakers have adjourned for the week. So it is starting off on kind of an odd foot. I guess the governor must be calculating that, look, I have a lot of power in the state budget, and I can force through a lot of policy proposals in the budget and offer it to them, take it or leave it, so I don't really need their goodwill right now. But, you know, sometimes you do need their goodwill, and it blows up in your face. So.
Well, let's talk about some of the big headlines. What's the biggest headline to you, Karen?
You know, I think probably the biggest speech that he gave, it's shaping up, is in New York City, where he's talking, positioning himself as he's going to be the protector of progressive values against the incoming Trump administration, though he never mentions Trump by name, but, you know, addresses the anger and the fear, says he's going to protect immigrants, a woman's right to choose, you know, all those sorts of things, you know, a fair minimum wage. That seems to, it seems like that was the big ideological speech, and the upstate speeches are more, a lot of them seem to be more like nuts and bolts, addressing problems, more kind of practical stuff. So that's probably the biggest headline, and, you know, the New York Times picked up on it today, saying, is he positioning himself for 2020?
Yeah, in fact, let me quote from the New York Times this morning, quote, of those who have prompted presidential speculation, Mr. Cuomo seems the keenest to quickly broaden his appeal since the election and is perhaps the most road-tested in political warfare and theatrics. His appearance with the still-popular Bernie Sanders, whom Mr. Cuomo did not support in last year's primary campaign, illustrated the governor's instincts. Although the event was Mr. Cuomo's, he allowed Mr. Sanders to speak last. Quote, he is fully capable of moving to where the Democratic needle proves to be moving, said Hank Sheinkopf, a political consultant who has worked for the governor in the past. And the speculation will be, see, he wants to run.
Yeah, and I would just say that Cuomo actually began this last summer at the Democratic National Convention. He invited Bernie Sanders to speak to the New York delegation. It was ostensibly to mend fences with some of the Hillary delegates and the Bernie delegates, but I thought of it then watching him. I said, is he going to try to be Bernie's heir if something goes wrong and Hillary Clinton doesn't win, even though she was ahead then, thinking, well, he's covering all his bases. But look what's happened. The Clintons are pretty much out of the picture. Donald Trump is president. And, you know, if you're the governor of a big state like New York, you know, why not try to run for president? It's almost like people would wonder what was wrong with you if you didn't, you know?
But, Karen, can you picture him? Well, let me back up and say, there's been a lot of talk since the presidential election that, well, here, this singular reason is why Trump won, or that singular reason. There's a lot of talk of the working class, which is usually code for the white working class. I mean, I think we should say, if we're talking about rural white Americans, we should say so. We shouldn't just say working class, because there are people of color in the working class, of course. But the bottom line is there's a lot of talk about the white working class in rural areas that drove Trump to victory, particularly in the Rust Belt. Can you ever see Andrew Cuomo winning those votes?
Well, certainly in New York State, he alienated that group of people with the gun control legislation. Because that just stuck in the craw.
They still hate the safe act. There are anti
class, and believe me, I know. I live in a rural area.
Absolutely,
and boy, I know that just rubbed them the wrong way, and so that he's starting off on the wrong foot with that. But he is talking about, you know, the free college tuition and infrastructure, and they, you know, that's the other thing he's talking about, is about providing for the middle class and addressing, you know, that anger. I mean, it depends. What kind of coalition do you have? And then it comes down to the Electoral College and the swing states. And you're right that he would probably have a lot of the same problems that Hillary Clinton did in those key swing states where she lost to Trump. But on the other hand, you know, things could change in 4 years.
Absolutely.
So, and you know, why not be out there? Although, honestly, I tend to think, and maybe this is just wishful thinking and, you know, starting to become an older person myself, I would like to see the next generation be the next, you know, set of presidents, you know, Democrat or Republican, from, you know, maybe younger people in their 40s right now or something like that, you know, or even late 30s, that maybe it's time for, you know, somebody new.
Talking to Karen DeWitt, Capital Bureau correspondent for WXXI, who has been covering the state of the states, the state of the state addresses that the governor has been giving around the state, and touching on free tuition. That was part of the platform the governor is rolling out. Let's listen to Governor Andrew Cuomo talking about free tuition at public schools.
In Western New York, 85% of the families will qualify for tuition-free public college. This is a game changer. This will say to every child in every home, I have the hope to go to college.
It's Governor Cuomo. Karen, does this have the support to pass?
I think so. I think that it may have to be tweaked a little bit. It's up to $125,000 salary. Your child would get free tuition. Maybe in Long Island, that would be higher, or the New York City area where sometimes people have higher salaries. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody can disagree that that's a step in the right direction because, you know, you see younger people graduating college with so much debt that they're really either living in their parents' basement or they can't start out on interesting careers. Frankly, I would not have the career I have today if I had had college debt because I didn't make any money at all till I was 30 years old. But it was okay because I didn't owe anybody any money. So, you know, if I owed $50,000 when I got out of college, I would not be doing what I'm doing.
Well, there are some who are already expressing concern. The Albany Times Union reporting that private colleges are worried about the proposal for free public tuition because it could sort of tilt the balance into where students go to school. It's already tilted, but they're concerned that all of a sudden nobody wants to go to private schools.
It's true. I mean, the private colleges are completely out of hand with their tuition, and I don't know, maybe some kind of subsidy to allow kids, high school kids, to pick private colleges and it not be such a burden to pay for those as well.
Well, and again, I'm trying to be the fair host here. We've had local private college presidents come on the show recently and say, okay, the sticker prices look out of control, but nobody pays the sticker price or very few people pay the sticker price. They would contend with the idea. They would push back against the idea that their prices are out of control.
I think the thing is, though, there's a lot of people stuck in the middle who do pay the sticker price. So maybe some help for them. But that's just, that's injecting personal opinion, I guess.
Well, the bottom line is we're going to see here that that's a big one. So free public tuition, there's a big one. The governor also talked about ride sharing upstate. Let's listen to his comments about Uber and ride sharing.
It's unfair to leave out upstate because, remember, upstate matters. And that's what I want you to tell your legislators when they come home. Don't come home to Buffalo unless you pass ride sharing for upstate New York.
Okay, so does this have the support, Karen, from what we understand?
Well, it seems to. It just really got stuck in the typical Albany political morass last year with the taxi drivers union and different groups wanting different things or wanting to put, a tax on the rides to fund other proposals. And it seems like it's something that, in a normal state, could be worked out. I mean, most other states have worked this out, correct? But I think now the lawmakers are really feeling the pressure. There's several different bills circulating, so it seems like they probably will have something to allow Uber and Lyft upstate with, some protections.
Is this a test of union strength to see if this can be blocked or at least modified?
Probably so. I mean, that always comes into play when you're talking about stuff, here at the Capitol.
Here's an email from a listener named Dan who says, Evan, following the governor's address, he says, I must call attention to a slice of our population that remains underrepresented, if not wholly unacknowledged, in the discussion about higher ed, and that is those of us who earned our degrees since 2007. We seem to be a forgotten generation whose economic struggles, which stem largely from student debt, remain unaddressed. Even when considering quality, progressive policies, and sensible prescriptions about public education, we seem to be totally unconsidered in the discussion. Thank you. That comes from Dan.
Excellent point.
And there's more than a few people in Dan's category. But I suspect Governor Cuomo would say he's doing the best he can under the current, sort of climate. And so we'll see on that. What are some of the any other big economic prongs that stand out to you, Karen?
Well, something that was pretty interesting that the governor just proposed this morning in Westchester County. He's been talking about the property tax continues to be a burden. He wants more consolidation. Well, today he said that he wants all the county executives in the state to come up with a plan to cut spending, and that he wants to put it before voters so that they vote in like a ballot referendum whether all these cuts should be made. And that's really putting the county executives on the spot. I just got off the phone with the Association of Counties, and they were pretty much taken off guard with this whole thing and reluctant, on the record to oppose it and say, what is this? This really seems crazy. But they did suggest maybe they're going to turn the tables on Cuomo and come up with a plan that says, okay, have the state pay for all the Medicaid that we have to pay for, or we're not going to do it anymore, or, have the state do this or that. So I don't really know where that's going to go. The big elephant in the room here is the so-called mandate relief. Counties have to pay for a lot of state programs that they're forced to do, but the state doesn't give them any money. And I guess it's more interesting to talk about a ballot referendum than mandate relief, which just glazes over everybody's eyes as soon as you mention it. But that was an interesting proposal that just came up this morning.
Okay, and on that note, I had a listener named Melissa who she had a couple of questions, and so Melissa, I'm going to do your second question first. She's curious to know what the governor's relationship is like with the legislature. We talked about that, but Karen, the point you're making now, I'm led to ask you, how is his relationship with, whether it's county executives or Bill de Blasio, you know, that always sparks some fireworks. How is his relationship with other political leaders?
Well, he was actually very nice to New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York City yesterday, and Bill de Blasio seemed very surprised by that and didn't know what to make of it because they've had such a bitter feud. Right now, he seems to be more angry at the legislature, and he's been taking shots at them and in some of his speeches, particularly the Senate Republicans, who he used to get along with really well. They're in control of the Senate because of a complicated set of interfighting with the Democrats, and they seem to be on the outs, and they've been, you know, exchanging, you know, kind of snarky statements and barbs. At least the Senate leader has, and the governor's spokesman has, and so I don't know how that bodes for how things are going to happen this year, because the Senate Republicans probably are not going to be as receptive to the governor's ideas as the Assembly Democrats. Hmm.
Melissa also wants to know, she said she heard something about the governor and access to voting.
Oh, yeah, that was a whole voting rights initiative that he essentially kind of took a lot of it from New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who proposed it in December. And I don't have all the details right in front of me, but it would, you know, make it easier to register to vote. I don't think he does same-day voting, but it would clean up a lot of the barriers to voting. And actually, that is one that I think the Senate Republicans might not be that receptive to, that he would really need to charm them or cajole them into agreeing to.
Right. And Melissa, you heard on WXXI Radio this morning, Monroe County Republican Party Chairman Bill Reilich expressing some of his concerns with same-day voting. He says that he's worried that it could lead to voter fraud. Jamie Romeo, the Democratic Party chair, responded to that by saying, "We hear that all the time, and there is almost zero evidence that it happens." But the point is, and Karen's right, there could be some Republican pushback on some of this access to voting and voting registration. We shall see there. A couple more minutes with Karen DeWitt. Karen, interestingly enough, a lot of talk about the Buffalo Billion squared, and let's listen to some of what the governor said. These are some of his extended remarks about the Buffalo Billion that he made yesterday, and I bring this up, I know we're in Rochester and people are saying Buffalo Billion, but the Buffalo Billion was controversial from the start, and a lot of people in Rochester, including some Republicans, some members of the legislature, have said, well, if Buffalo gets its money, should Rochester get its money? And that kind of led to the Hunger Games, like fight for the $1.5 billion pot last year. Well, this is the governor talking about more support for Buffalo and Western New York.
First proposal, grow tourism. We're going to open a tourism visitor center on Grand Island. Proposal two is support the extension of Buffalo's light rail to Amherst. Buffalo Billion 1 did a lot of great work in the inner and outer harbor. We want to build on that. At the outer harbor, we'll leverage open space recreational activities by creating a visitor center, bike path, and redeveloping the Michigan Pier. We will establish the Buffalo Blue Way to increase waterfront access by building 18 new docks, boat launches, and establishing guides for visitors. To revitalize Buffalo's east side, we'll establish commercial corridors and underutilized land to promote new community growth. Will move the Buffalo Manufacturing Works to Buffalo's east side, which will bring jobs to the east side. We will invest $10 million to clean up the zombie property issue and homesteading to revive and reinvent blighted areas on the east side and in Cheektowaga.
Right, the reason we're playing that, Karen, is when you think about the Buffalo Billion and state investment, is it trusted right now? Does the public feel like these are smart investments or that these make for good press conferences and good sound bites? And should we expect more of this?
Well, I think in Buffalo they do, but some other parts of the state are seeing these economic development programs starting to fall apart a little bit. Notice he did not mention the Rochester Photonics program, though he does have a proposal for a $10 million competition among companies. But Friday, one of the major companies in that, as you well know, pulled out. Utica was supposed to get this big nanotech thing going, and that company pulled out. The former head of all that, Elaine Collieros, is under indictment. And so the question is, are some of these programs falling apart? In Syracuse, there's a chip fab, I think. No, it's an LED factory that's a year behind schedule. And even the big Solar City factory in Buffalo looks like it's behind schedule. So, you know, the governor really, despite all the indictments and scandals surrounding these programs, he keeps going forward with them almost stubbornly. And certainly he wants people in Buffalo to love him.
Sure. And
as you can hear. And I think he must think that Western New York stops at the Batavia border, because we heard nothing about anything about Rochester in that speech, even though it was billed as supposed to be for the whole region.
That's right. And interestingly enough, that proposal that Karen talked about, the establishment of a $10 million photonics competition in Rochester, came from a separate release. We don't have sound on that because the governor didn't talk about that. But the interesting thing, Karen, is the juxtaposition. That announcement Friday that this California company, Photonica, is pulling out. There had been talk of 400 jobs or more from Photonica in Rochester. That's not happening. And it's almost like the state realized that you've got this bad news about photonics. How do we blunt that with something new? And maybe that's me being cynical. Maybe this $10 million photonics competition has been in the works for a long time. And that's very possible. So I should tell the listeners, I don't know that. But then you get this announcement that Cuomo wants to establish a $10 million photonics competition in Rochester, and there has been some celebration. Let me quote from a release that we got from Jim Sinal. He's the president of High Tech Rochester, and here is what he had to say about that. Quote, I want to express my deepest gratitude to Governor Andrew Cuomo for his support of the Photonics Venture Challenge. The Photonics Venture Challenge, which has been identified as a priority project by the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council, will consist of a large-scale annual startup competition based at High Tech Rochester's Business Accelerator in the Sibley Building that will attract high-growth potential companies to the region and foster the growth of companies and technologies developed here in the Finger Lakes. Startup companies from across the globe will compete for 10 to 15 slots, and once selected, companies will receive an initial investment and will participate in an intensive 4 to 6 month business accelerator program. So that's from Jim Sinal, excerpting there from his release. Karen, eventually there's going to be a put up or shut up with photonics, and I don't know if we're there yet.
Well, that's the question, I think. I mean, people really want these things. It's jobs, it's good paying jobs, but the question is, are they real? And I think Elaine Collieros, who was the head of SUNY Poly, who convinced a lot of these things to get going, he was a great salesman. And, you know, maybe he was good at convincing people to keep going on these things. And since he's lost his job and is under indictment, it seems like a lot of these projects are slowing or falling apart. And that's the big question. I mean, are they all going to fall like a house of cards? Is the Cuomo's Empire State Development and Howard Zemsky, who heads it now, are they going to be able to shore it up? Do they have the sheer force of will to keep these companies going? Or is it all, you know, going to start crumbling? I think that's the big understory this week.
And so last question then, as we look at whether it's photonics, the Regional Economic Development Councils, the Buffalo Billion Squared, more money for Buffalo, and you talk about the fact that we've seen Collieros under indictment, we've seen scandal, we've seen concerns about who the money is going toward, and all kinds of ethical questions.
Yeah,
there.
Was there bid rigging? Was
right,
there bribery?
Right.
Yes.
Is the governor, in his push for kind of re-upping and reinvesting in Buffalo and new money for photonics, is he acknowledging in any way these kinds of quasi-scandals or concerns? Is he saying, look, I know it hasn't gone as smoothly as people wanted, but we're still on course? Or is he sort of pretending it never happened?
I think he's still in damage control, and he wants this stuff to go forward and be his legacy. And right now he's calculated, I'm going to push through. You know, hopefully nothing horrible will come up at these upcoming trials of these people who are under indictment, and we can just keep going with these programs, and eventually the jobs will happen, and that's what people are going to look at, bottom line. They're going to forget all this other stuff.
Karen DeWitt is WXXI's Capitol Bureau correspondent, who has been trying to keep track of the governor's many speeches. What number is he on? Number six or something like that? Four out of six?
Four. It'll be four starting, I think, at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
You've been busy this week.
Yes.
Thank you for all the work and the reporting and the perspective this hour, Karen.
Well, thank you very much.
Karen DeWitt, WXXI Capitol Bureau correspondent, the best. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and talk to Michael Kink, who's the executive director of the Strong Economy for All Coalition. We'll get his take on the State of the State addresses he's been hearing, and also sort of his look at what the governor has been doing in his 6 years now. So we'll talk to Michael Kink. Listeners, I'd like to hear from you. What have you heard in the State of the State addresses? Number one, on free tuition, are you interested there? Does that have your attention? Is that something you want to see? What do you think of the New York Times article floating this idea of Cuomo trying to position himself as the Democratic Party's next presidential contender? You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Back in just a moment. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, the CEO of RTA, Bill Carpenter, joins me in the first hour. We're talking about all issues related to public transportation in Rochester and our area. Then in the second hour, we're talking about LGBT education in local schools. Some schools are making more of an effort than others, and we're going to talk about that on Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My next guest is Michael Kink, the executive director of the Strong Economy for All Coalition. And the last time we saw you, you were here in Rochester. Michael, where are you now?
Thanks, Evan. I'm at the state capitol in Albany, where hundreds of New Yorkers are protesting in the hallways, in the escalators, in the elevators, demanding action from lawmakers and Governor Cuomo as we enter into the Trump era. There are huge, huge challenges to our state, and activists and organizing groups from all over the state are making it clear that the same old isn't going to work, that folks need to step up. Listeners can see some of the action on Twitter. There's a hashtag, MyFamilyOurNewYork, MyFamilyOurNY. And it's a pretty big day of action here at the Capitol.
Michael, I want to talk about how you view the priorities moving into the Trump presidential era, especially in New York State, especially as you see it in sort of the halls of Albany, what you think the governor and the state legislature should be focusing on. What are the big issues as we move into the Trump administration? Before we do that, though, tell us again what the Strong Economy for All Coalition is. What's the short definition for what your organization does?
We're a labor community coalition working on economic justice and income inequality. We're fighting for fair taxes, good budgets, better jobs, more pay, getting big money out of politics, and fighting for essential funding for education and health care for all New Yorkers.
And I want to ask you what you think about the governor's tuition proposal, if that sort of fits into the framework of what Strong Economy for All is doing. Jack in Pittsford wants to weigh in on that, too. So, Jack, you go ahead, and then we'll turn it over to Michael Kink. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, good afternoon, Evan. I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's long overdue. My concern is, would it be something that's tiered? Would there be certain parameters? How would it be rolled out would be one thing. A follow-up to it, I would like to say also that I think we're lucky to have Governor Cuomo here. I think he's been one of the strongest voices to oppose the hateful rhetoric that's been coming in under the Trump administration. He has stood up and has made comments on immigration, on the LGBT community, on various things that may well be positioning for 2020. And you know what? That would be a great thing. I think he's a great combination of holding strong on progressive ideals, but at the same time, he's got that strong character and personality. I think that he can go up against a bully like Trump. I'll listen to your response.
All right, Jack, thanks for the phone call. Michael, let's start with the free tuition proposal. Is that something that Strong Economy for All supports?
Yeah, I think it's in the context of making all elected officials and all politicians more responsive to the economic needs of regular people, right? Governor Cuomo is responding to some of the criticism after the election that the Democratic Party did not offer big, bold solutions that helped the vast majority of people, that there were targeted programs here and there, The Bernie Sanders free college plan got a lot of traction during the presidential primaries. Hillary Clinton adopted it in part. Governor Cuomo is coming out with his own proposal that offers a significant amount of benefits to not just low-income and working people, but also to middle-class New Yorkers, folks making even up to $125,000 a year. And he's gotten a little bit of flack for directing some of the benefit towards the higher incomes and not enough to the lower incomes. And, you know, that takes us to the point where I think Cuomo takes the ball part of the way, but folks like Strong for All, folks like Citizen Action, folks like Metro Justice in Rochester, organizing on the ground, are trying to take it all the way there. We have the money to pay for free, high-quality community college and college education for all New York students. We can do that, but we need fair share taxes. We need to make those billionaires on Park Avenue and those hedge fund managers on Wall Street pay their fair share. Part of the response to the Trump era is going to be demonstrating that state government can work effectively and that state governments can do things that are big and bold and powerful and benefit a lot of people. When in contrast, you know, my read of the Trump and GOP Congress in Washington is they're going to be doing trickle-down on steroids. They're going to be doing a lot of policies that make billionaires and millionaires richer and richer, and not enough of the benefits are going to come down to regular people. So federalism, you know, the division of power and responsibility between the federal government and the state government is going to be really important in this new era. And governors like Andrew Cuomo, governors like Jerry Brown out in California, local elected officials, mayors, are going to have a lot on their plates to respond to the challenges that are coming down from Washington while trying to demonstrate a good, bold alternative, right? The caller said, you know, people love the idea that college can be affordable, that a good, high-quality state university education doesn't have to put you in endless debt for years and years and years of your life. That is a strong and popular idea. If it's funded so that people actually do get benefits and there's no bait and switch, it's going to be good for everybody.
Well, here's someone who may disagree. It's John in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think Cuomo is not concerned as much with his reelection or running for the president as he is covering his tracks. I think he's under a lot of pressure right now because of these indictments and these trials that are to come up with some of his people that he put in these positions that are rigged these contracts and whatever. In regards to the trickle-down economics, really, trickle-down economics applies to what's happening today with the Obama administration and Cuomo administration. What is happening, the government is taking our tax dollars and trickling it down, picking winners and losers. That's true trickle-down economics. If you unleash the private sector, give them money instead of taxing the private sector, putting more resources in the private sector, that's true success. That's going to be a true success story, as Ronald Reagan did in the 1980s.
All right, Michael Kink, what do you think? There's a different approach to where taxes and the economy goes.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to have some points of agreement and points of disagreement with the caller. I think the corporate welfare programs here in New York are out of control. We're up to $8 billion in subsidies to corporations and private businesses in the economic development programs run by the state, the bonds and subsidies that are offered by things like industrial development authorities. There are winners and losers being picked all the time, a lot of times based on campaign contributions, political influence, and that's where I think I would agree with the caller that there is way too much corruption, whether it's illegal corruption that will be prosecuted by the courts or legal corruption that's like get-along-to-go-along type corruption that make people sick. I think part of what we're doing here in the activism, you know, there are folks here in Albany today arguing to get big money out of politics, to establish a public financing system for state elections, to try to reduce the influence of real estate developers and connected businesses, like we've seen the scandals that the caller referred to. So, you know, my work is often to, applaud Governor Cuomo when he's on the right track, and to criticize him and try to encourage him to get off the wrong track. So you're rarely going to find me saying everything he does is good or everything he does is bad. Our work here is to challenge him to do absolutely the best for all New York.
Michael, the caller, John, I think has expressed himself as a Trump voter in the past, but he is not necessarily sort of the same mindset as a good number of Trump voters who were populists. And I say Trump voters who voted for him believing that he is going to go to Washington and think of the working class, to think of people who've been struggling to get jobs, even if that means whacking the executives who are sitting on million upon million upon million of dollar bonuses and salaries. And this populist streak does have some crossover between Sanders and Trump. And so I'm curious to know, though, if you think that is that just sort of a Trojan horse to get Trump to Washington? Or do you have any hope, Michael, that populist idea could play out?
I think we're going to be watching that very, very closely. And, you know, our goal is to be, you know, kind of whistleblowers for the working class, the folks that might have been for Bernie, might have been for Trump, but all of whom are trying to kind of get their families through the week, through the month, through the year, and make ends meet. We would like to lift up all the folks that are concerned about their economic future. And I think the collision between the Trump administration and the GOP Congress is going to be really interesting to look at. For example, Trump campaigned on closing the carried interest loophole that benefits hedge fund managers. Trump campaigned on protecting Social Security and Medicare and ensuring good, affordable health care for working people. The GOP Congress is set up to continue that tax break for the billionaires. The GOP Congress is set up to not only get rid of Obamacare, but to block grant Medicaid, to cut health care funding, to privatize Medicare, and to move towards privatization of Social Security. So, you know, we're going to try to tell the truth. And where Washington is taking radical action, it's going to shake down to the states, right? In Rochester, that voted for Trump may not have been voting to kick grandma out of the nursing home or to kick, you know, nephew John off the Hep C meds. But that absolutely could happen. If they block grant Medicaid, if they take a huge cut out of it, we will be looking at having to rebuild our healthcare system from the ground up. Trump's education pick, Betsy DeVos, another billionaire in the cabinet, is talking about completely privatizing public schools, pushing all federal funding to private schools and charter schools. You may agree or disagree with school choice and charter school issues, but the idea of a radical defunding of our public education system is, I don't think, what every Trump voter signed up for. So our goal here is to make it clear at the state level what's happening in Washington, the impact on regular people, and to push our state elected officials here at the Capitol in Albany to create a better alternative to New York. It's totally possible to do. They have the legal authority. They have the resources. It's time for them to step up. And that's why these protests are happening here today, is to try to gird them into action and out of their, you know, kind of day-to-day political fight.
On Twitter, Dave says, don't let John the caller redefine the term trickle-down economics. This is obfuscation at its most blatant. Dave, I take the point, and I will just say I'm an evidence guy. I don't really have a dog in the fight when it comes to economic systems and models, so I like to defer to people who know a lot more than me. I am not an expert on it, but the vast majority of people you will read on it, including some former Reagan, you know, sort of staff members, and Bruce Bartlett and many others, will tell you that trickle-down economics did not work as intended, and it is sort of a bit of a relic. So, and I'm not trying to take any sides there. I'm not trying to make a political statement. I'm just trying to be evidence-based. So, Dave, I take the point in your tweet there. Michael, before I get back to the phones here, and I want to grab a couple more here, we're talking to Michael Kink, executive director of the Strong Economy for All Coalition, who is in Albany today. There are some competing narratives since the election regarding the working class, Michael. And if you look at Americans, voters who made less than $50,000, they voted for Hillary Clinton. I mean, not all of them, but she won that segment of the voting electorate. Donald Trump, to the extent that he won the working class, he won the white working class, and he won the Rust Belt working class. He won union voters in Ohio. He won union voters in Ohio. And that's a remarkable thing for some Democrats you talk to in Ohio who had not imagined that to be possible. So let me ask you this, Michael. It's a lot more complicated than just saying Trump won the working class. I understand that. But why do you think Trump won the white working class largely, and why do you think he won the working class in Rust Belt states?
There are a couple of different perspectives on that I think are accurate. One is that the Democrats did not offer a clear populist pro-working class alternative, and they pretty much haven't since the dawn of the Bill Clinton era back in the 90s. A lot of smart thinkers about politics viewed Clinton's rise in the 90s as a way to moderate between extremes. But part of what the Democratic Party did as an institution is let go of its close connection to organized labor, to working families, and to the middle class. And that includes the white working class, black middle class, working class, and Latino working class, Asian working class, right? The interests of regular people were often shut out in favor of the interests of Wall Street, of the very rich. And I think that criticism is accurate. I've been one of those folks fighting for more progressive and more populist perspectives over the years, not, you know, in any way unfair, actually building economic fairness. And I think a lot of the problems of the economy were caused by this kind of solidification of the Democratic and Republican parties together. At the same time, Trump offered, you know, full-bore populism. He talked about job loss. He talked about economic loss. And where, you know, I think it's also important to talk about, he offered hot-button issues like we talked about last November. He offered racial dog whistles and air sirens. He offered a kind of pugnacious, borderline violent attack on terrorists overseas and communities of color here at home. You know, that was attractive. He very clearly stood for, you know, the kind of dominance of men above women and against the sort of empowerment of women, you know, in a broader political sense and on the job with his, you know, tapes. So there are a mix of things. Some of them, you know, are comfortable to talk about. Some of them are uncomfortable to talk about. But I think all of that added up to a winning strategy. I, you know, said when I was with you in November, I'll say it again now, I do not believe that everyone who voted for Trump is a racist or has a racist perspective. But I do believe that Trump's racial dog whistles were an essential part of his appeal. At the same time, he made some criticisms of the way the economy is going in America that were spot on. We don't have enough good jobs. Our communities in the Rust Belt and Midwest have lost a lot of good jobs, and the government has not been doing enough to build them back.
All right, some more listener feedback. Let me grab Tony in Geneseo. Go ahead, Tony.
Oh, hi. I mean, I'm really happy that Governor Cuomo proposes a free college tuition act. I'm not familiar with his act or what he's proposed exactly, but I'm quite familiar with Sanders' proposal.
It's pretty similar.
Sanders' proposal had a funding mechanism in there, and the funding mechanism was a transaction tax. And I don't think I've heard that, the Wall Street transaction tax. And I don't think I've heard that from Governor Cuomo, and I think that would be a really great thing to do.
But,
and it's exactly in line with what your guest is talking about.
But, Tony, let me just add, and I'll see what Michael King thinks about this. You're right. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, Sanders, to pay for Sanders' free tuition proposal was in the neighborhood of $60 to $80 billion. annually, and he wanted to, quote, tax Wall Street speculation. And I asked...
That was $167 billion.
$167 billion, okay. So I talked to a couple of economists who I don't consider ideologues, and I said, is this going to cover it? And they said, way too simplified. This is not a sophisticated proposal to cover it. But they said, they also said, you know, this is the kind of thing that evolves over time and that would probably get fleshed out if he were the candidate and if it were more serious. But I don't know. I mean, Michael Kink, what do you think?
Well, I think the caller has exactly the key point when it comes to Albany and the state capital is, are we going to have some economic fairness on the tax revenue side to go with programs to benefit working and middle-class New Yorkers, right? We have more millionaires than we've ever had before. Since we instituted our millionaire's tax, the millionaires did not leave. More and more of them have come here. We have a higher share of the billionaires in the Forbes billionaire list than any other state in the country. And all of them can afford to pay their fair share for things like decent health care, good public schools, and low cost or free college.
But what's the number, Michael?
New Yorkers.
What That's should the number
part
be?
Of the social compact.
What's the number? What's a fair tax rate for someone who is a millionaire in New York?
Well, you know, right now we have a 8.62% tax rate at the state level, I think, for the categories of income that are above $1 million. And, you know, there have been many, including the foremost scholars of income inequality, you know, Thomas Piketty and Emmanuel Saez at the University of California, Berkeley, that are calling for much, much higher tax rates. When the American middle class was booming, when we had the economic era that everyone loves to talk about, the 50s and the early 60s, the tax rate on millionaires was 93%. There is a lot of room to move between 8.62% and 93%. I have not argued for confiscatory taxation, but I think we need to tax millionaires more, particularly as we respond to this era of Trump, where they're going to get billions and billions of dollars in new federal tax cuts.
But should it be 20%, 30%?
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the revenue rate. And I also think it's fair to say the money's got to go to a good investments, right? It's a fair criticism of government programs that not enough of them do the work that they're supposed to do. I think if you make the case, whether it's to millionaires or billionaires, that we can establish a world-class higher education system so that everyone that goes to public schools and then on to college in New York has skills that can compete with anyone else in the world, those millionaires and billionaires will view it as a reasonable price to pay for living in the state. I work with a group called the Patriotic Millionaires. We literally have millionaires coming up to Albany to lobby for higher taxes on them. I'm not talking about taxing working people in the suburbs. I'm not talking about taxing seniors who can barely hold on to their homes in the city. We're talking about Park Avenue billionaires that are making more money than have ever been made in the history of humankind, and asking them to do their fair share as they start to get showered with more tax benefits from Trump and Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. It is a reasonable and fair deal.
All right, so let me just get one more listener email and then down in our last couple of minutes. Tim writes to us and says, I can't listen to people keep saying that we have the money to support just about every program they think we should be supporting. I believe in many of the programs they're talking about, free college, etc. But that money actually comes from somewhere, us. And taxing the upper class will help, but it won't take care of everything. The people who it hurts the most is us in the middle or the upper middle. And guess what? When the governor picks winners, it's rarely us in the upper middle, who, by the way, get the privilege of paying for just about the whole ride for tuition, etc. I know I'm supposed to be grateful for what I earn, and I am, but at the end of the year, I have to look at what my wife and I have to show for it, and more times than not, it's monetarily at the same level as we were the year before. We both have to work to pay for three kids in what was full-time, now part-time childcare, as well as the daily and monthly expenses of a family, while paying more than $10,000 a year in school and property taxes. Full-time daycare at one point was $36,000 a year for three kids, and from that, we got back $171 from the state to offset it. What a joke. My story is a reality to many people who live here, and I am not a right-wing conservative. The sooner Cuomo goes, the better. That's from Tim. What do you think, Michael?
I agree with about 98% of what Tim said. I am not interested in increasing taxes on the hardworking families that are in that position. I think what Tim and other New Yorkers need to do is to look squarely at both the income and the special tax deals that are received by the New York City billionaires. I frankly think most folks in New York, most regular people, have not enough understanding about just how extraordinarily rich these people are and how lucrative their tax breaks are. Look at the carried interest loophole. It's a special tax break only available to hedge fund and private equity investors that lets them pay a lower tax rate than teachers and truck drivers on the service fees for their investment. Donald Trump said they were getting away with murder and he wanted to close it, but the hedge fund and private equity donors gave so much money to Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan that they're not going to let Trump close it, and it's going to stay open. If we assess a fair share tax on New York, just our share of what's lost to the federal government, we'd raise $3.2 billion a year. That's a billion with a B. $3,200 million every single year. We're going to get a bill in. It was introduced last year in the Senate and the Assembly. It was introduced in New Jersey, in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. We're going to work state by state to impose fair share taxes on those hedge fund billionaires. If Trump can't get it done in Washington, the states can get it done in their state capitals. That is real money. $3 billion is no fooling around. And I completely agree with folks that are struggling with property taxes, struggling with the high cost of daycare, transportation. My goal is to tax millionaires and billionaires, not to tax everyday New Yorkers.
Michael, online where? Strong Economy for All Coalition's online where?
Strongforall.org. And I'm on Twitter, at M-K-I-N-K, at M-King.
Thank you, Michael. I always appreciate the time.
Great to be with you. Appreciate Michael, the time as well.
Michael Kink is the Executive Director of Strong Economy for All Coalition. You heard Karen DeWitt, WXXI's Capital Bureau correspondent, and we'll have a lot more to discuss regarding the state of the state and the next budgets. Have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you Wednesday on